Monroe Today, a weekly public affairs program focusing on what's happening in our county. Here's this week's contributor, Gilda Stanberry, Executive Director and CEO of the Forsyth Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Welcome to this edition of Monroe Today. I'm Gilda Stanberry, your host, and I'm delighted to introduce you to Percy Freeman. Welcome.
Thank you.
Mr. Freeman is new to me. I've heard many stories about him and his love for telling about Monroe County history and how it relates to his own history. And I'm excited to talk to you today.
I'm eager to share.
Good, good. Okay. So a moment ago, I was just telling you how much I have enjoyed your book, but I haven't read it cover to cover. I have kind of treated it like a short story collection. And every time I have opened it up, there's a new story.
Yes.
Which I think is really a nice way to tell your story. How did you decide to write?
Well, during the 90s, I was still searching for my father. And I tried everything based on the information I was provided. His name was Percy Hughley. So all of my life, I've been looking for Percy Hughley. Mm-hmm. So I started searching and searching and searching. And then sometime in the late 90s, when the issue about the Confederate flag as the state flag, I started studying Civil War history. Okay. And I wanted to know if any of my relatives participated in the Civil War from Monroe County. I started traveling throughout Georgia and Monroe County, photographing all of the historical markers. And so I didn't find anything at that time. I did later, but I didn't find anything at that time. And so this was about the time that DNA was introduced.
Okay.
One of the first companies was African Ancestry Incorporated. The DNA test, you could trace your roots back to Africa to a specific tribe or group.
That's right.
I took the test. At the same time, still trying to get information about my father, which I didn't have at the time. Later, I started doing PowerPoint presentations on history and the use of DNA to find your relatives. And the PowerPoint was called Finding Your Roots. So at that point, I started researching family history, compiling family history. During my research, I found a lot of obituaries about people with limited information about their lives.
But it's a place to start.
It's a place to start. So I thought, well, you know, if people had written more about their lives, future generations would know what their experiences were, such as people who may have experienced the Black Plague. If there was a personal notes or letter or whatever left behind, we would know what their personal experience was like.
Right.
So I wanted to leave something for my kids, future generations. So Ed Williams, who's from Juliet, Ed Williams III, whose grandfather owned the Whistle Stop Cafe, had written three books, and he and I were classmates in school. So after I started writing, I sent him a copy of the manuscript. And he suggested that I write a book.
Yeah.
So I said, well, why not? So when I started writing, well, what am I going to write about? So my life is what I know best, growing up in Juliet. And so I started there with my childhood and then wrote about the rest of my life, all of the different adventures and life experiences, the ups and downs and all of that information.
Well, and that's really one of the cool things about your book. And like I said, when I open it up, I'm somewhere different at a different period of time, different place in your life. And so when you were a child, you were in Juliet.
Yes.
And then you were left when you were around 16?
Well, I lived in Juliet until I was 18.
Okay.
I ran away from home at age 16, but I only went like two houses over to live with another relative.
Okay.
But
ran away on my tricycle once too.
So right.
Kind of, I can relate.
Yes. So at age 18, I left Juliet and joined the Air Force.
Okay.
And
it took you around the world.
It did. It did. Throughout my life, I've traveled to about 35, 38 countries, and I've been to all 50 states. Part of it was from work. Part of it was from, work with the Federal Aviation Administration. Part of it was military, and the rest was personal.
Okay. All right. I don't want to get you too far away from your book because there are fascinating stories, but I think this helps people to kind of know who you are and a little bit about you and your perspective. So your time in the Air Force, but you also played ball.
Yes, I played semi-professional football in Italy for 2 years.
So how is that different than the guys playing semi-pro ball here?
It's a very unique brotherhood because they're all military veterans.
Oh.
Each military installation, the Air Force had a team. It was called the USAFE. United States Air Forces in Europe. And they started playing in 1946 and it ended in 93. So we have a complete history of the league in videos and photographs going all the way back to 1946 when it first started. So I went to England in 76.
Okay.
And it was November, so it was like in the football season, but I did get a chance to see the championship game between a German team and the England team in England, both Air Force bases, Bedburg and Bentwaters. And I saw that game and I thought, man, I can play football again. And so, unfortunately for me, I got orders and they sent me to Italy. When I arrived in Italy in May of 77, I learned they were starting a new league there. The North Italian Football League. And so it was the inaugural season.
Right.
We played against Army teams, active duty Army. And these teams are comprised of players who played in college, players who played in high school. We had players from the Air Force and Army academies on the team. So there was a variety of players and experience and talent. So I made the team, and I did very well over there. It was a great 2 years.
What a great experience.
Yeah. And in fact, we had our reunion in San Antonio, Texas back in October. We had 150 players and coaches and commanders that attended.
So this many years later, you all are still getting together.
Yes. And we will be incorporated as a 501c this year.
Fascinating. I'll get off on the pro team stuff, and I'm really more interested in the family roots. So we can always talk about that later.
Well, I can tell you the most interesting story that will probably shock some people.
Well, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Well, in 2003, as I said earlier, I started a PowerPoint presentation called Finding Your Roots.
Right.
And I would teach people how to find their roots. In 2006, at the Monroe County Library, I did a presentation, and there's a news article about it. I've been involved a very long time with the family history. So at that point, as I stated earlier, I had taken some DNA tests. So
right.
In 2008, National Geographic project called the Geno Project, where Dr. Spencer Wells traveled around the world collecting DNA samples from people all around the world, because their theory was that everybody originated out of Africa and they could prove it through DNA. And so they were asking people to send DNA to them. Well, I sent my DNA, and it was sometime after that, I believe it was in 2009, Family Tree DNA was the first company to actually match people. So National Geographic sent me a letter and asked if I wanted my DNA transferred over to Family Tree DNA. And I'm like, oh,
absolutely.
Of course.
Right.
Because if you're matching people, it might be a tool to help me find my father. So I agreed, and they sent me the information to access it online. And when I first opened it, I noticed that I had relatives through DNA. And I was like, well, I've never heard of these names before.
Right.
So I looked at the first four people, and the name was Wyatt. But I noticed that the email address was the same for all four people. It turns out it was a family out of Bakersfield, California. Ralph William Wyatt was a judge. His father was a retired deputy chief for the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office. And then his two sons, Ralph's two sons. So I sent him a bio with a photograph and phone number. Ralph contacted me and said, Percy, I'm white and you're black. We got to figure out what happened. I said, well, you tell me your story and I'll tell you mine.
Right.
So he told me the story about the judge, Wyatt was a probate judge at the time. He later became a Superior Court judge. But he was a probate judge and he started searching his roots and couldn't find anything beyond his grandfather.
And he's 3,000 miles away from you on top of everything else.
Correct.
Okay.
So he started researching his grandmother's side, and that's when he found that his grandfather had changed his name from Ledbetter to Wyatt.
Oh.
And later we would find out, possibly for various reasons, but I'll get to that.
Okay.
So when the judge found out that his grandfather's real surname was Ledbetter, he started researching the Ledbetter roots, and that's when he found that his grandfather, Joseph Ledbetter, was born in Talladega, Alabama in 1872. They moved to Walker County, Georgia in 1874.
Okay.
And I said, well, Walker County, Georgia, that's right across the state from Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Right.
My mother went to Chattanooga, Tennessee and got pregnant when she was 15 and came back to Georgia. So there's got to be some connection there. So my mother came back home, and I knew that my father was black in appearance.
Right.
But,
okay.
You know, I didn't know anything else. So anyway, he said it was Walker County, Georgia. I said, well, that must be the connection. So he invited me to the reunion the next year, the Ledbetter family reunion, in Lake Guntersville State Park in Alabama. So at the time, my wife at the time, we went to the reunion. Of course, we were the only black people there. And I got to meet the family, and we sort of gelled.
Right.
We got along great. One of the family members who was the historian of the family came to me and said, Percy, look like you're having a great time. We're enjoying you. And here's a copy of the family tree. Going back to Durham, England, the Ledbetter family lineage, going back to the 1500s in Durham, England. And I thought, oh, man, this is great. I don't even know my father, but I got a family tree on my father's side going back to England. What's next? So later on, she came to me and she said, well, Percy, here's another family tree. Joseph Ledbetter's mother, Joseph's father was John, and his mother was Emmeline. Emmeline was German. So here's a copy of your family tree going back to Jurich, which is a city near Stuttgart, Germany, in the 1400s.
Now, just to put a pause in here, had you been near these places during your time in the Air Force?
Well, I had been to Germany.
Okay.
But I didn't know I had German roots.
Right. There's just a serendipity to it.
I had been to England because I lived in England for 6 months. I didn't know I had English roots.
Oh, how nice, though.
Yeah,
I think Okay. So, all right. So now we have two sets of family histories.
Right. On my father's side, but I still don't know my father.
Okay.
So I continued to attend the Ledbetter reunions for several years up until recently. So we still have reunions. And
nice.
There are pictures in the book of the family. You can check it out if you'd like. So we continue to have reunions, and still today, and I met a lot of the family members. However, I still did not know my father. So,
how did we figure this out?
In 2012, Ancestry started DNA testing and matching.
Okay.
Matching, right? So it was the first time for them in 2012. So, of course, I participated, and I had many matches. But when you see matches, you don't know who they are because you don't know who these people are. Some of them I could identify because they were in my family book tree history already. And I right. and I recognize the name, but a lot of people don't take the DNA test, and the people who do it from all over the country. So I didn't know who these people were. So I would send out messages periodically based on, in DNA language, it's called centimorgans, CMs. Right. The higher the number of CMs, the more closely related you are to a person, right? So a mother or son might have like 3,500 CMs. An uncle may have like 800, 900, you know.
It's just that much removed.
Right, yeah. So anyway, the people who were more closely related to me, I sent messages to them. And one young lady in Detroit finally sent me a partial family tree because I said, at some point, Ancestry had changed their format where they could separate paternal from maternal. So you would know if they were on the mother's side or the father's side. And right. since I was seeking both, actually, but I was interested in the paternal side because I didn't know my father.
Right.
So she sent me a partial family tree. And as I stated earlier, I was looking for my father, whose name allegedly was Percy Hughley. Well, when she sent me this partial family tree, I saw there was a man born in 1889 named Percy Hewlett. The fact that it was similar in name, it was my name, and the fact that she's DNA related to me, I put two and two together and say, okay, this is something I can work with. I started researching Percy Hewlett, who was born in 1889 backwards, and found that Percy Hewlett had a son named Henry Hewlett. And Percy lived in Huntsville, Alabama. Henry lived in Huntsville, Alabama. Henry's son was named Percy Hewlett, and he moved to Chattanooga, Tennessee in
1935. Checked out.
Right. Huntsville, Chattanooga, Walker County.
So, all together.
So based on Joseph Ledbetter's age, we believe that he may be the father of Henry or Percy, more than likely Percy.
Oh.
My great-great-grandfather. My great-grandfather.
And so now things connect.
Well, we believe that. We haven't confirmed that except for the DNA with the Ledbetters.
Right.
And I've matched several Ledbetters through DNA, other Ledbetters that I don't even know. So we know that there's a Ledbetter lineage connection right there. And the more likely place would be the Walker County, Chattanooga, Huntsville area. Because back then, the train transportation was the main mode of transportation from Huntsville to Chattanooga. Chattanooga was a big train hub, so it makes sense. So we know that much. And when I found my father, as I stated in my book, I went to Chattanooga, Tennessee, and did all of the searches I could I found out my father was murdered. He was murdered 18 days before my mother died. My mother died in she was burned in a house fire in Juliet, but died in Atlanta in March of 1960. And when I went to Chattanooga, I found out my father was murdered in 1960, in February 15th of 1960 in Chattanooga. So I, you know, did the investigation, tried to find any records I could. Only thing I could find was the indictment.
Right.
I couldn't find any police reports because Chattanooga didn't maintain good records, and they deteriorated because the records were in a non-climate controlled environment. So the records deteriorated from 1960. So to this day, I still don't have a picture of my father and don't know what he looks like.
I hope something just pops up. You just never know.
Yeah.
So I have so many questions. So first of all, let's take care of business. It's called Time Passages, and it's available on
Amazon. Yes. Paperback, hardcover, and Kindle.
Okay. So
how did I come up with the name? Is that what you want?
I do want to know.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it makes sense, but I want to know the backstory.
Okay. Here's what happened. When I was living in Italy, in 1978, Al Stewart, a British artist,
he's a musician,
wrote a song. name Time Passages.
Yeah.
And every time I hear that song, it makes me think about Italy. And, well, I'm going to get to that part about
Italy. I'm sorry, I'm pointing. I'm sorry, y'all.
Yeah, so, no, so what happened is Al Stewart wrote the song, and I always remember that song, and I liked the song, and so I was like, oh, when I was thinking of a title for the book, I thought, Time Passages, that makes sense, because I'm talking about different times of my life.
Right.
So I thought, that's a great name. I'm going to name it Time Passages. So what happened is my wife and I wanted to go on a cruise. We both love smooth jazz. So she had a friend who had already planned a trip to go on a smooth jazz cruise where all of the smooth jazz artists are on this cruise. And they do it twice a year, every year in January. So anyway, I managed to tag along. And my wife's a big reader, so she read the bio on Peter White, who's one of my favorite artists. And she asked me, well, Percy, did you know that Peter White co-wrote the song Time Passages? I said, no. So I said, well, I must talk with him. So I met with Peter White on the cruise ship, and I told him the story, and he said, he co-wrote the song.
Fascinating.
He co-wrote the song with Al Stewart. In fact, that was his first gig with Al Stewart. He was like 22 years old, and the band and Al were going to dinner, and they were working on a song, and Peter White said, oh, I'll just stay behind and work on some chords. So when they came back, Peter White had come up with the chords for that particular song, Time Passages. And so after we returned from the cruise, I contacted Peter White and asked him, would he write the foreword for my book?
Yes.
Within 2 weeks after I sent him a copy of the manuscript, he sent it to me.
Nice. And it fits perfectly.
Yeah.
I mean, that fits perfectly.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are nearing the end of part one.
Yes.
And the important, so there will be a part two of Time Passages and more with Percy Freeman. So I hope you will join us on our next edition of Monroe Today. I'm Gilda Stanberry, your host, and we'll talk to you next time.
A special thanks to each of our contributors and their guests. Monroe Today is a weekly public affairs presentation of WQMJ. Join us next week, Sunday at 7 a.m. for Monroe Today on Magic 100.